Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Does Florida have a new state budget yet? Not quite.
There are no projects on this list that were not in one budget or the other.
Also tonight, contention and conflict still rage at the Capitol over the matter of workers' compensation reform.
It is not going to make any transparency in the rate-making process. It is not going to assist injured workers in any way, and it is not going to stabilize rates or help businesses get their workers back efficiently.
We'll also find out if there's time enough for standardized testing opponents to get their way in the legislature, and we'll ask the time-honored question, is fantasy sports gambling? I'm Tom Flanagan. Just tomorrow and Monday remaining in this year's Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. We start off with Florida Public Radio's Nick Evans, freshly returned from the Florida legislature, where the budget battle continues. What's the latest, Nick?
Well, they have settled out a number of things, and they have left more to be done. A lot of major issues, but not really the biggest. They brought up the Health and Human Services budget, which has been a sticking point for over a week now, it seems like. And they decided, even after they've been wrangling over this for days and days behind closed doors, they're still not quite ready. And then what's more, the bill for state employee raises, they chose not to bring up the other half of that, which has to do with the state retirement program. Part of the deal for Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala to get that done was that there had to be changes to getting into the pension plan. Essentially, you have 8 months, if you're a state worker, to decide what plan you want to be in, either the pension or the 401k investment plan. They've passed that bill through the Senate, I believe, and they need to settle it with the budget conference, and they chose not to bring it up.
So where do we go from here?
They are planning to bring back the Health and Human Services question later tonight. They probably will bring up the retirement issue tonight as well, or maybe even tomorrow. And if Senate President Joe Negron is to be believed, we're aiming to have this all locked in by Friday at 1 to get us to a vote at 1 p.m. or so on Monday. So the other thing that came up today that both sides agreed on that's kind of interesting is the supplemental funding initiatives.
There are no, to the best of my knowledge, there are no projects on this list that were not in one budget or the other and were not therefore available for discussion in subcommittee, full committee, and on the floor of one house or the other.
So that's Jack Latvala explaining what these are. And what he's stressing here is that this is transparent. They're really, really trying to hammer that point home because House Speaker Richard Corcoran from the start has said this is going to be the most open, transparent session that you've ever seen. And yet here we have a list of funding issues that are coming in here at the 11th hour. The Senate side is somewhere around $50 million. The House side is about $10 million. This is really, really similar to the sprinkle list that we often see coming in very late in the budget session in previous years, where leaders throw in a number of different projects that are handouts to various either lobbyists or members to make sure that the budget moves forward smoothly. But again, Carlos Trujillo, who's the House budget chief, stresses this is a transparent process because you can actually see what these things are and track them to a specific bill.
No, I think what Speaker Corcoran has committed to is transparency. I think what Speaker Corcoran, the best part about this is that you get to see it. You could sit there and scrutinize and see the list and see which projects are on there. You could ask what questions, why they might be on there. And if you look at how Speaker Corcoran used his list, he used $4 million to buy back cuts to the Department of Juvenile Justice. So we could argue that's a member project, but I think it benefits all of society.
And to give the House its due, being able to do that does have to do with Richard Corcoran's rules that he put in place at the beginning of the session, so that any House member that wanted to initiate a project had to file a standalone bill. They required this brand new system where you listed who the project was for, what lobbyists were connected with it, all sorts of things like that. So yes, you can in fact go back and track like how this all came together, but at the same time, it does feel very reminiscent of that last-minute toss-on-a-little-pork type process for the budget.
We'll rendezvous tomorrow and see if lawmakers are any closer to getting this nailed down so they can get out of here on Monday, Nick.
Oh, gosh, I certainly hope they do. Thanks, Tom.
Florida Public Radio's Nick Evans. Thanks, Nick. Employer groups are threatening to bolt, and trial lawyers are in open revolt as lawmakers spend the final days of the 2017 session haggling over workers' compensation reforms. Jim Ash has more.
The trouble began last year when the Florida Supreme Court struck down business-friendly reforms dating back more than a decade. Gone were strict caps on attorney fees and limits on disability benefits.
I want to also talk about workers' comp. This is, I think, maybe the most important business issue of the session.
That was Florida Chamber of Commerce Executive Vice President David Hart addressing North Florida business leaders on the eve of the current session. Insurance premiums are spiking and hurting bottom lines across the state, Hart said.
The 14.5% increase, which became effective December 1, will keep hitting you and every other employer in this state as each month goes by and your renewal date approaches.
Republican Senator Rob Bradley of Fleming Island wanted to make Florida a loss-cost state. That would allow carriers to propose rates individually rather than funnel them collectively through a trade group known as NCCI.
When you're trying to achieve a goal of keeping rates down and keeping them stabilized, you need to look at everything. And included in that is the idea that when our system goes about developing rates, is there robust competition amongst the insurance companies?
Bradley also proposed changing the way judges award attorney fees when injured workers dispute claims. Judges could award up to $250 an hour under Bradley's plan. But the House wants to keep NCCI and set a $150 an hour cap. In the waning hours of session, Bradley has agreed to drop his lost cost proposal and to come down to a $200 an hour cap. But Florida Workers Advocates head Mark Toby warns that won't work.
It is not going to make any transparency in the rate-making process. It is not going to assist injured workers in any way, and it is not going to stabilize rates or help businesses get their workers back efficiently.
Based in Tallahassee, FWA includes attorneys who specialize in workers' comp law. Business interests will regret supporting the House plan when rates continue to spiral upward, Toby says. But National Federation of Independent Business head Bill Hurley reminds critics that state regulators still make the final call on rates.
We put confidence in our insurance commissioner to take sharp pencils out and examine the data that the industry presents and recognize that it's mountains of data.
Bradley sacrificed FWA support by conceding to most of the House plan. Now, employer groups are threatening to fight the bill, too, if he refuses to come down to the $150 an hour cap. But FWA's Toby says no bill would be better than the House plan. After all, Toby says, the Supreme Court rulings haven't led to massive layoffs or business failures.
The employers of this state are doing just fine because there's nothing wrong with the way the system is right now. The point of this legislation was to make the system better, not to make it worse.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Still to come on Capitol Report, will Florida's public school students get a break from years of almost nonstop testing, or will the legislative clock run out first?
We're not quite there, but we are so close to the end of this game, I say we're like at the 2-yard line. We're really close.
After the death of a gambling overhaul, lawmakers are finding new paths for their gambling priorities, like fantasy sports.
This issue was included within our gaming package, but it is simply a clarification.
And lawmakers accelerate through a bunch of transportation issues, one addressing the matter of what seems a never-ending tsunami of specialty license plates.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
There's only one day left for lawmakers to decide what the state of testing will be in Florida's public schools. Lynn Hatter reports on the circumstances of what is now the last remaining vehicle for big education changes.
In the beginning, there was a promise. Testing changes were on the horizon.
We can not spend time testing when we should be teaching. And when you're teaching, you're learning.
That's Republican Senator David Simmons of Maitland. His words were quickly followed up by Republican Senator Ana Terry Flores, who promised fewer, better tests. But her Senate Bill 926 was instantly slammed.
That bill has great talking points, but if you read it, it does nothing.
That's fellow Republican Senator Tom Lee at a press conference last month. He was touting a bill by Democratic Senator Bill Monford that eliminated all end-of-course exams and restored the paper and pencil testing option to most public school kids. Monford heads the Florida Association of District School Superintendents, and his bill was the favorite among public school advocates, educators, and even his fellow lawmakers. But it was always a long shot in the House. And in the end, Senate leaders decided to go with Flores's bill. Senate Bill 926 grew to add in Monford's testing language and additional requirements for another favorited plan, mandatory recess. Yet both were seen as steps too far in the House. In that chamber, lawmakers began work on yet another proposal, House Bill 549 by Republican Representative Randy Fine, which received some extra amendments by Representative Manny Diaz.
The majority of the amendment comes from House Bill 773, which I believe you have already seen and voted on once, which is my the bill I filed on assessments. And the extra that's on here is the removing of the Algebra 2 end-of-course assessment.
Diaz had his own bill, House Bill 7073, and that made three different testing-related proposals. Fast forward to now. Flores's main testing and recess bill has been postponed twice in the Senate. Diaz's bill died a little while ago. Now there's only one measure left standing, that of Representative Fine, and that's the one the Senate took up Thursday with a substantial amendment.
First, the bill modifies a statewide assessment program. It eliminates certain tests. We know this has been a major issue for us over the last several years. It eliminates the Algebra 2 end-of-course exam.
Flores is reading from a massive strike-all amendment covering everything from pushing back when tests are administered to allowing students to wear sunscreen. One of the strongest endorsers of the measure is Democratic Senator Bill Monford. Most elements of his original proposal have made it into the final product. It's not what Monford says he wanted, but...
Is this bill what I wanted? No. I wanted more, but I'm also wise enough. I can count. And I know that at least this is a good beginning.
For Flores, the best part of the bill is a plan to mandate recess in elementary schools.
For all those recess moms, dads, grandparents, parents, and children who are watching, we're not quite there, but we are so close to the end of this game to be able to be in our favor. We're at the, I say we're like at the 2-yard line. We're really close.
Now it's the House's turn to take the bill into the end zone. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Florida lawmakers want to make it easier for parents and residents to challenge school textbooks. Depending on who you ask, the bill's a slippery slope towards book burning or a step towards community control. But Kate Payne reports with just days left in the session, lawmakers face a tight deadline to pass the measure.
Your grandmother may have told you there's no accounting for taste, but when it comes to taste in public textbooks, things get tricky.
There are some counties where the constituents in those counties believe that the instructional material being vetted by the state is too liberal.
That's Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee.
And therefore, some of the instructional material has inappropriate information in it by their community standards.
There's a relatively small but vocal group of Floridians who are concerned about some of the books landing in K-12 classrooms and libraries. And as it happens, one person's literary masterpiece is another's smut.
And I won't go into the details of what's in the book, Beloved, and what brought us to before the two committees and the school board, because I'd be asked to leave the room.
That's Hamilton Boone of Brevard County. He's been trying to get Toni Morrison's Pulitzer Prize-winning account of a former slave pulled from his son's high school library. He objects to the book's sexually explicit content and says the school board is ignoring his complaints.
Today, parents are purposely blocked from being involved in their child's education.
To be fair, Dania Beach Democratic Representative Joe Geller points out parents do have an appeals process.
We have existing rules that allow for parent input through the existing system that our school boards are organized to handle.
Nonetheless, Naples Republican Representative Byron Donalds wants to give Floridians more power to pull books they find inappropriate.
It allows county residents to challenge the adoption of an instructional material and object to the use of other materials made available to students.
That's right, residents could lodge complaints, not just parents. And school boards would have to take more public testimony and evidence and appoint someone to oversee the process. Anything that looks remotely like censorship can make people wary.
But I think it is a slippery slope from something like this to down the road, censorship and eventually maybe even book burning.
That's Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Gary Farmer. Critics don't want to see the state's knowledge suffer because topics are deemed inappropriate. But Senate sponsor Tom Lee wants to empower local communities in what is a very diverse state.
The community standards are what's really driving this, and I want to do something that isn't onerous on the school districts so that there's not a second vetting process. But just make sure that these citizens have a right to redress in those areas of the state where they might have different community standards.
But retired educator Beth Mims worries the change could even derail classes by delaying the rollout of new books.
Because I have a feeling that we may be opening school without instructional materials.
Mims says the change could swamp districts that are already pressed for time and resources under the current review process. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
After legislators called off talks for a major gambling overhaul, some are looking for new avenues to get their priorities through. One of those priorities deals with fantasy sports, as we hear from Regan McCarthy.
Fantasy sports are games played with imaginary teams using stats of real players. Typically, it's a game among friends and a small amount of money is involved. But right now in Florida, it's unclear whether the millions of residents taking part in those games are participating in illegal gambling.
This issue was included within our gaming package, but it is simply a clarification of an old attorney general opinion that created a gray area on whether or not games of skill, like fantasy sports contests, are or are not gaming.
That's Tampa Republican Senator Dana Young. She's talking about an opinion written in 1991 by then Attorney General Bob Butterworth. But Young says more clarity is needed. She has some language that could help clear things up, but it appeared dead after top leaders in the House and Senate called off talks on a gambling overhaul bill this legislative session. Representative Jose Diaz, who had been leading the negotiations in the House, told reporters he had heard language clarifying the status of fantasy sports would also likely be dead for the session.
I heard that it's okay in the House to amend it somewhere, but since it hasn't gone through any Senate committee, the Senate rules make it very difficult for them to amend it onto something, even if it was the subject
it was in a bill. It was in the other bill that went on.
Just telling you what I heard. I'm repeating.
Then Tuesday, Young presented the Senate fantasy language as an amendment on another bill.
This amendment makes it clear that in our statutes, fantasy sports contests are legal games that we all can enjoy. This protects the millions of Floridians that partake in these games with friends, families, and coworkers.
But the vehicle Young chose to move that language forward raised some concerns for members of the Senate. Here's Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley pressing Young on that issue.
Is this germane to, as a gambling bill, with the rest of that bill, which is basically professions?
Young argues the answer is yes, because it addresses the regulatory authority of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation.
This is a bill that clarifies the jurisdictional authority of DBPR to regulate professions and practices within our state, and I think that this fits squarely within the four corners of that statute and this bill.
With those changes, the bill will need another review from the House. But the House has its own fantasy sports legislation. That measure by Sanford Republican Representative Jason Brodeur stalled in committee, but Diaz indicated it could still be taken up on the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
A bill making it easier for more people wrongfully convicted of a crime to receive compensation is now headed to Governor Rick Scott for approval. As Sasha Cordner reports, it would make changes to a Florida law that currently denies compensation for those with a prior felony record.
Just a few months after Governor Rick Scott approved a claims bill for William Dillon to receive compensation for his wrongful incarceration, Dillon sang the national anthem at a Major League Baseball game. But decades earlier, the now free man who spent 27 years in prison for a murder he did not commit was singing a different tune.
I was taken by the laws of justice, cast away as a stone, left to rot in the dungeons for the murder of a man I didn't know.
It was while serving his life sentence that Dillon wrote that Black Robes and Lawyer song in his prison cell in the 1980s on a roll of toilet paper. Beaten, stabbed, and raped, he calls it, quote, the most horrible time in his life. It was only through DNA testing that he was finally released in November of 2008, and later that same day, Dillon couldn't help but happily strum his guitar and sing for his family. Still, even after his release from prison, Dillon could not be compensated. That is, until he went through the claims bill process to receive $1.35 million in 2012 for his wrongful incarceration. Normally, he would have applied for compensation under the Victims of Wrongful Incarceration Compensation Act, but Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley says there's a catch.
If someone like William Dillon, in prison for a murder he did not commit, he cannot seek compensation because he had a past conviction for a drug possession.
That's why Bradley says under the current statute, only four people have received compensation, and he wants to change that. Bradley had wanted to do away with the clean hands provision altogether, but his Senate proposal did not match the House bill, which still included exceptions for people with certain felony records.
If you've committed a prior violent felony or you're a multiple felon, in that case, you would still be precluded from receiving compensation, but all of those people who perhaps have had a possession of drugs in the past or some felony that I think it's unjust that they would not receive the compensation that they deserve for spending time in prison for something they didn't do, they would now be able to receive compensation.
And House sponsor Fort Lauderdale Democrat Bobby DeBose sees the measure as a good first step.
It is definitely a step in the right direction, and I think this is a great moment for the state of Florida.
Both DeBose and Bradley also thanked former Senate Democratic leader Athenia Joyner for starting this journey after she'd filed it for years to no avail. And because both bills have unanimously passed the House and Senate, the measure now heads to Governor Rick Scott. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the Florida legislature is weighing a transportation-related measure in the final days of session. Lawmakers are considering revising laws related to self-driving cars, driving under the influence, and specialty license plates. Sarah Mueller reports.
Orlando resident Bill DeMott's life was radically altered when a drunk driver killed his 20-year-old daughter, Carrie Ann, in 2015. He says his two other children are struggling to adjust to life without their sister. DeMott says his daughter could still be alive if the DUI offender had an ignition interlock device in his car.
By the current laws, there is no accountability for this 100% preventable act And I'm standing here with my daughter because there's nothing keeping an offender from driving again, drunk. And there's nothing in place that will keep another mother or father from standing in front of this committee next year.
Lawmakers are considering allowing judges to order Floridians convicted of a DUI to install an ignition interlock device in their cars as a condition of probation. Interlock devices are breathalyzers the driver must use to start the car. The bill also allows first-time offenders who install the breathalyzers and complete counseling to avoid a guilty plea. Representative Cord Byrd says he hopes to incentivize people to choose to use the device so their record can be sealed.
So that they would be able to not report that on an employment application. However, law enforcement would still have access to the information such that if the person is arrested again for DUI, that will show up on the record and they will have the enhanced penalties that goes with a repeat driving under the influence.
Meanwhile, lawmakers are also discussing how to treat cab companies and ride-sharing companies developing driverless vehicles. Senator Tom Lee wants the state to bar exclusive deals between governmental bodies and companies like Uber, Lyft, and Sidecar. Deals would be allowed if they go through a competitive bidding process. Senator Jack Latvala says that means taxi companies wouldn't have to go through the same process.
Taxi companies and transportation network companies ought to be treated equally. And, if this amendment doesn't provide that, then we shouldn't adopt it.
And lawmakers are also considering adding more specialty license plate designs. Under the legislation by Senator Aaron Bean, the pre-sales minimum required to make the plate increases to 3,000 starting in 2020.
We cap the number of plates in this amendment to 125. Each year, we will eliminate the lowest performing tag.
The bill also requires a plate design for Auburn University, located in Alabama. The measure also creates new license plates for military veterans who have been awarded the Bronze Star or the Purple Heart. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPRCapReport. And join us each weeknight at this time throughout the regular 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades Restoration and Fish and Wildlife Conservation, the Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.